We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
And now, to break down another Chiefs second-half collapse, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Off and running here on a Monday. Thanks for joining us. Did I already say that? I don't know. I'm still.
I don't think you did.
Still kind of settling in here.
Settling in.
Enjoying the AC. It was very nice. It was beautiful up at training camp. It was like 68, 69 degrees. A breeze, clouds, so it wasn't heating up at all. Great morning up in St. Joe when I was up there.
Supposed to drop 10 more degrees tomorrow, I think.
You know, I think 70 for a high tomorrow.
70, yeah.
Enjoy.
71.
Enjoy, Curtis.
I don't see a 90s for the rest of the month. No,
that's not. Yep, we're done.
Because if there's anything that's
snowing in 3 weeks,
yeah. If there's anything that's easy to project, it's the weather in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
You know what they say about the weather in Kansas City? If you don't like it, go back where you came from.
Yeah, I agree. And if you want to hear somebody talk about the weather, just get within 50 miles of Gary Lezak, and he will do it. I found that out again. I was reminded our buddy Gary Lezak on Thursday, all over me.
Ah.
You know? And I said, why did you back down to Alex Smith's wife back in the day? And he just didn't want to talk about it. Did not want to talk about it.
Not going there.
And he goes, yeah, you're on my side. I go, yeah, I was till you backed down. You have legit criticism. All right. But always love seeing Gary.
As a man with some energy.
Oh, my God. He's awesome. Fantastic.
There's nobody like you, man.
No. He is awesome.
I'm quite fond of his hairstyle.
Yeah.
Same.
I know. Hey, no doubt. We're going to talk to Sam McDowell in the 3 o'clock hour about Gary Lezak, get his thoughts on the impending retirement of Gary Lezak this December.
One of our many thin guests we have, we're noticing.
When I was sending you file footage.
Although,
do you like the theme of what the file footage was?
It was thin.
No, that wasn't the theme. The theme was not being thin. How did you look at those pictures?
Oh, everyone was facing away from
Yes,
you?
It was the back of all their heads.
Yes.
I find that to be entertaining.
You've included Tom, who isn't even on the show.
Who?
Tom Martin. Wouldn't that one of the pictures?
No.
Although that was looked just like.
No.
Who was in the blue shirt then?
No. You bombed out.
It was Teicher, wasn't it?
No, I saw Teicher.
You bombed out.
Apparently.
Sam McDowell will be here to not only comment about Gary Lezak, but point out just how brutal Curtis is at identifying people from behind.
Who's that?
See if Dravetta can get it before I give it away. He's got a new look. The facial hair thing's new. Take the facial hair off and see if you can figure it out. 2-minute drill coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Nate Bucati will be with us. His Big Steps run is coming up. We'll also talk some soccer with Nate Bucati, the voice of Sporting Kansas City. Jason Reed is going to join us. Penned a book that I am enjoying greatly called Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America. So we'll talk to Jason Reed, about his book and what does it mean for America? I think that's a great question.
Yeah.
And he answers it in his book, so we'll talk about that coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll talk Chiefs, Royals, Sporting, K-State, Missouri, KU, always a topic in the program. Thought I would...
It's no wonder Curtis didn't recognize this guy. Classic Jayhawk hater.
Yeah.
Wouldn't know who Jesse Newell is.
That's right.
Okay. I haven't seen him enough to recognize what he looked like.
You don't know who Jesse Newell is? So you're saying Jesse Newell's not important enough for Curtis Newell to know who he is?
I have not seen him in person enough times to know what he would look like right off the bat from a three-quarter.
Shot at Jesse. Trust me, I think everybody could
think it's really
figure out your moon pie back of the head.
Yes. Just look for the... Look like a bag of hot dogs in the back of someone's neck and a little brown spot. I got the birthmark to.
I will, in your defense,
everyone know who I am.
A bag of hot dogs all laid in a row.
Yes, that's true.
That is important. Yeah,
not thrown in there all willy nilly.
Not random. Not like the GIF of the hot dogs flying to.
Give
to
yourself some credit and call them your neck abs.
Neck abs. I don't have too many. I think I just got the one. But probably the back of the head probably is better than the front.
Oh,
for me,
is that a horse's ass? No, it's Curtis's face. So we got a lot coming your way. Phone lines are open at 913-3810-810. We do like to take your calls, so if you've got some thoughts, opinions. Like I said, Royals, Chiefs, Sporting, K-State, Missouri, KU, always a topic here in the program. I try to mix those up in order, so hopefully nobody gets, you know, upset about that. Let's start with some Chiefs football. The Chiefs, how did you put it? Finding another way to blow a big lead? Is that?
I said another second half collapse.
Yeah.
That's two straight. Is it a problem?
Yeah. We got you. No, the answer is no. Yes. Just overall satisfaction with the team? Did you? I mean, like, what is, do you feel more or less? Wherever you were beforehand coming in, and I'm in the 11-6 to 12-5 range coming in. 12-5 is how I graded. I usually say, okay, I'm going to knock one down. I think maybe even I might even had a 13-4. I did. I went 13-4 when I went game by game. So I said I'm going to knock that down to 12-5 is my prediction going into training camp. I'm not coming off of it. I don't know that I got any more on board, but I definitely didn't get less on board. There's a player or two I'm less on board with.
Yeah,
which we'll talk about. Yeah, as individuals, but I think the Chiefs have other answers in those spots. But you know, the first team offense knifed right down the field.
Yes.
Patrick Mahomes. I would say I didn't see anybody high school wide open, but they're not really scheming.
No.
You know,
bread and butter offensive plays. And
so what I did see was Patrick Mahomes dropping dimes. I mean, putting it right on guys' hands.
Yeah.
And, you know, I so that to
me. He got flushed through the hole to the right and hit. And that's just like 5 years ago, that would have been. Did you see what he did? Now it's just like, oh, it's Patrick Mahomes.
Was it Valdes-Scantling? Did he hit Valdes-Scantling on one that was a little bit of a needle thread? Like he was moving up towards the line of scrimmage and put a dart in there.
That's what I think I'm thinking
of. Is that what it is? Okay.
He was going off to the right, and Valdes-Scantling was coming across back from the right sideline, and he kind of threw one of those, and now it's just somewhat commonplace for him where he makes that throw. He was a little behind Travis Kelce a little bit on, but he had a guy in his face who kind of planted him. So in retrospect, that ends up being actually a hell of a throw. There's almost – it's one of those, okay, put a blanket over him. From my perspective for the game, okay, that's right. One possession,
six. Very happy to see him out. Yep.
Looked like he was in midseason form. Sit down. Grab a clipboard.
Yes, I agree. I do still want to see him play, which we can talk about that, whether or not he should be playing at all. But I think he should. I definitely think he should be playing. I think you need it. I think repetitions help everybody. Not that he couldn't go out and beat the Arizona Cardinals or any team without playing any preseason games. I think he's good enough to do it, but I think he'll be better. Whatever he would be with no playing time, he'll be better with some playing time. It's a physical game.
Yep.
It's not a fire extinguisher that you break only, you know, the glass in case of emergency. Well, let's just find a quarterback that we can go 10-7 with, and then in the playoffs we'll bring Patrick. No, it doesn't work like that.
And in a year where he's got so many new, this is the biggest upheaval of targets he's had. So there's more reason for him to get some in-game activity. But that's a better word. If the game was going to move you in one direction, it would be plus.
Really?
I don't know how you could watch that game and go, I'm going to grade them back a little bit.
Hey, they couldn't stay in front of the Bears. They're a bad offensive team. I mean, you could find a way. But I felt like even when the Bears were making big plays, you're like, they made a lot of like, hey, great catch, great catch, great catch. Like perfect throw, which I don't think Fields can make all the time. I definitely don't think Nathan Peterman and Shecky McCutalot,
whoever else that was in there,
whoever else was playing, was actually a notable name. I'm like, how do they have like two backups that I know who they are? Most teams, you're like, who the hell is like Crumb?
Yeah, like what?
Welcome to Inspector Crumb. who
John
knew?
John Candy bottles out there. Throwing dimes.
Yeah.
Like his first play from scrimmage, fumble. Oops. Sorry, Derek Gore.
Yeah. But my point being, I thought they were making big plays just to move the football, just to get first downs. I thought the first team Chiefs defense was suffocating. I thought the pass rush was what I wanted it to be. I'm not bumping up my thought process because we said going in, the Bears' O-line sucks. And really, the pass rush could only do harm. There was no way that they were going to do anything in this game where I was going to be like, I mean, short of, I guess I shouldn't say no, 10 sacks in the first half. Yes, I've been like, oh, my God. Yeah, they're bad, but, I mean, look at this. They did what they were supposed to do against a bad offensive line. So,
Five sacks on 31 dropbacks. And, by the way, Trevor Siemian's the guy you were thinking of.
Oh, yes.
Former Denver starter.
Yeah. So I like what I saw. Nothing. I don't back up the bus. If we were to say, okay, things we didn't like, not that we're panicking, not that it's a disaster, they didn't run the ball real well. You know, that was one of your big ones, right, Adam? You wanted to see better running of the ball. You didn't come away just completely tickled with the overall, what was it, 52 yards rushing on
19 carries.
19 carries?
Yeah. 2.7 per.
I saw two runs that made me go,
and
hey!
By the way, 28 of those 52 was Dustin Crum scrambling. So the rest of the team, 24 on 16 carries.
Yeah, 16 for 24.
Even the starting offense didn't make me go, wow, that looks like a team that, and maybe they're just flat not planning for it. I don't know. It really is. Maybe it's just at a point where we shouldn't expect to see it because they're not going to practice it.
And I'm going to tell you, being up there today, there's not a lot of time put into running the ball, right? Like, he wants the timing and everything going on the passing game. And, you know, maybe I caught it on a day. This was my first day up at camp. And, you know, maybe tomorrow I'll see a bunch of run activities. Maybe, you know, when it was offensive time, they were throwing to work on the passing game. The defense wanted to work on the pass defense, so they were still throwing. Maybe they coordinated. Maybe tomorrow we're going to see a lot more run stuff. And I don't think Andy Reid had ever answered this question straight, but I'd be intrigued by, does Andy Reid think that run blocking is mostly, not all of it, mostly the product of just physical ability? Are we physically stronger than you? Then we'll give you some techniques, and you should be able to go out and apply it, and we should do well. I'll get some misdirection going to help you set up your blocks, to create some angles. I do think, you know, Bill Snyder will never get the credit he deserves for the incredible run game coordination that he did. When you can get a defensive lineman to take a step the wrong way, you can take an average offensive lineman and make him look like an All-American. And so there are things that can help that a lot. I did notice, again, more RPOs, right? Now, maybe that's like, this is what we did. We finished up last year. Everyone's got this on tape. Let's do it. I still, like, if I had a frustration or things I still want to see, let's put it that way, I want to see some downhill runs. And there were a couple, but I also saw the RPO get stuffed. He had an RPO on the second and one where you're like, I know he wants to run it, and they got stuffed on that. And, you know, and I know it was an RPO because they came back and showed Kelsey or somebody getting held or thrown down as they went down the field for a catch. And he didn't come off blocking. So it was clearly an RPO. And I get, you know, the RPO was a sensation. You know, it was, you know, when Baylor under
Briles.
Yeah, Art Briles. You know, it was kind of this new thing. And I'm like, oh, my God, wait, they could do either or no. And it was just like option football. Is he taking the quarterback or is he taking the running back? They know how to play it. They stay back until you give them the ball, and then they rally to the ball. They know what RPOs look like. They're coached for it. They're ready for it. They defend it better. And so, there's still a place for it. But I think the RPO now, we're getting to a point that you've got to go kick-ass throwing it and or kick-ass running it with traditional downhill runs before the RPOs work. As it is right now, they're prepared how to defend it. And Eric Eager said it, linebackers don't move against the Chiefs. They are incredibly well coached to do not commit. They don't come forward. They don't go back on those RPOs. They stay home, well coached. And then when you hand off, okay. The running back goes by, and now we know it's on Patrick Mahomes' hands. Then they start their drops. So it's not working. It's not creating the commitment one way or the other that the play is designed for, according to the analytics at Pro Football Focus. So but again, they don't show it now. Fine. Just get to it against Arizona. Punch Arizona in the mouth, and I'll be thrilled. I'm certainly thrilled that the Spinderella fullback dive is still there, the trusty Spinnerama quarterback
Michael
move
Burton first
to
then down.
Hand it to the fullback, because that's money. That hasn't been stopped.
It's crazy,
but about
how money that is.
50% of the time.
If even that's, it's silly how Oh, here he comes. We know what's going to happen here. Boom. First down.
I mean, I'm like, Burton is in the game. He is getting the ball.
And he's going to get boom. First down. I'm sure defense is like,
they don't always get it.
How do we keep getting beaten by that?
They don't always get it. They get stuffed on it a lot.
With him. Not with him, though. Not that I can remember.
What? With Anthony Sherman?
With Sherman, but Burton seems to be.
The brat is better than the sausage?
Seemingly.
I like a good brat myself.
Oh, hell yeah.
Tell me, have they picked that up and run with it with him? Because we call him the brat all around my house all game.
They should.
Yeah. Anyway, but, you know, something else that I was kind of like, let me say this. I don't know how Kennard makes the team.
Dude.
That guy, you know, and I'm like, okay, let me see. Did he just have a bad day? When I'm watching him go up against backups for the Bears. So, like, when they did the one-on-one drills this morning, I'm like, I got to really focus in on him. He's about 50%, which, by the way, is awful.
Yes.
He got abused by some guy I don't know. Who's 94? That's Herring, right? The Georgia guy?
I think so.
I think it was Herring, who, I mean, literally – gave him like just a duck under, and honestly, it's like if you wanted to make a funny of an offensive lineman getting beat, like usually guys can be like, oh, well, he kept the arm around there around his neck, and maybe Patrick Mahomes steps up and we don't get a sack, but we definitely get a hold. We either get a sack or we get a hold there. That's not a good. You know, you can kind of debate about some of them. This was the classic. I'm still here. He's over there. It was as bad as I've seen an offensive lineman get beat in a training camp drill ever.
And if you're going to get beat by a guy in a training camp drill, you don't want it to be a guy who's coming off a game, which he did nothing. I mean, Malik Herring was one of the more ineffectual pass rushers on Saturday, and you're telling me he was blowing up Kennard.
You know, the conversation up there amongst a bunch of his media fatties was that, oh, and Sam, was that the, you know, every team, well, I don't want to name anyone, but a guy I trust, a guy I think knows football, said every team out there said, well, we'll take you a guard. And he apparently, part of the reason he was there in the fifth round was because the Chiefs are the one team, he's like, I want to play tackle, and don't draft me if you want me to play guard. And apparently the Chiefs are the team that said, okay, we'll try a tackle.
Chiefs have no real history of giving an offensive lineman a position he prefers, do they?
Are we, oh, yeah, Orlando Brown, yeah, der. I mean, maybe he's hurt.
Did Kennard's dad play right tackle?
Maybe he's battling through a back injury or something.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say he can't do it, but I'm going to be stunned if he does. And someone's going to have to give me the information of why he's not at the level he is. And I'm like, this guy was like, and Sam McDowell goes to me because, you know, he's an ass like this. He goes, yeah, starting right tackle, you said.
Ah, you know, he wasn't going to forget that.
Having not seen him, yeah, I thought he would beat out Lucas Niang, who I don't think is any world beater. No. I said, here's the problem. I mean, I saw some film, if you can call it film. I hate that. Some video online of him, like all the Chiefs draft picks.
Film sounds cooler.
Let me watch some of the highlight tape, you know, stuff that they've got. And he had some moments. He's a massive human being.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, okay, yeah, I saw some of those. Yeah, and you'll find some that say, okay, here's his weaknesses. And you can read, you know, a lot of draft breakdowns. Strengths are this, weaknesses are this. Like, okay, right? And like, he's a right tackle, not a left. And so they're like, yeah, a little stiff, maybe plays a little high, tries to do it too much just off, you know, raw strength, can be beat with this move or that move. You're like, okay, yeah, okay, I get it. That's what I'm expecting. He's right tackle, not left. Then you throw in that he was voted the SEC Offensive Lineman of the Year. And you're like, oh, well, there's got to be somebody. You know, do you remember, Curtis? I can't remember if you worked with us. I think you probably did. Back in the day, I used to do post game with Pete Enoch and Theotis Brown on another station.
I don't think I was there then.
Okay. And we would have our player of the game. And around week three or four, like there was a game, I think the Chiefs blew. They weren't any good then. I think it was right before Dick Vermeil came. Maybe it was like 99. Maybe it was the 99. Maybe it was 2000. So maybe it was the first year of Dick Vermeil, and they were headed towards a 6-10 finish, I think. And there was a game where it's like, yeah, nobody really impressed. Right? It was when Trent was throwing interceptions his first year here when they didn't have the line all built and everything. And, like, for a joke, one day we go, player of the game? I mean, one guy stood out, Victor Riley. I mean, what a star. I mean, that guy just overwhelming. And people loved it. They thought it was funny. And so for the next 11 weeks, we voted Victor Riley.
I do remember you doing that.
Okay, we voted Victor Riley the player of the game. Not because we really thought 11 times Victor Riley was the player of the game. We thought it was funny.
Yes.
Off the Bears game in the practice I watched this morning, I believe the SEC thought it would be funny to vote Kennard the offensive lineman of the year. I do.
Thought it'd be, let's just do it. Let's see if anybody notices.
And then, so here's the other part, right? What's Buddy Bell taught us? What's the biggest thing that Buddy Bell, former Royals manager, left with us as sports fans? What nugget did he give us? What did he articulate that in perfect Queen's English?
Good enough to be an A-H?
You're not blanking good enough to be an A-hole. Okay, I don't know. The backstory on Kennard is that he's very strong beliefs of his politics, and there it was a very present thing around Kentucky.
Wow.
If that wears some people out and you're not blocking anybody, I don't think they want to cut a fifth-round pick, but I think they can cut him and get him to the practice squad off the tape he's creating right now.
I mean, I'll use somebody who's not – and I'm sure a good guy did a great job Thursday night, but Dustin Colquitt is open, has been open about his politics, but he's an example of somebody who's really damn good at his job.
But he's
and probably doesn't bring it up in the locker room. So
right.
There's a difference.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Is this? He was apparently
he's not Curt Schilling.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, everyone has their beliefs and can be passionate about it, and can state them. And you know, in your,
sure.
You know, hey, I'm voting this way, and I think you should be. That's fine. It's when you wear people out. And the word was, it's one of the first things I can tell you. Like, well. Don't ask about this because he would wear people out down here about this.
It's not necessarily the beliefs of people. It's that they can't talk about anything else.
Yes.
They cannot have a conversation about any other topic.
And so,
him bringing it back to the wire every time.
Yeah, right. I don't care what it is. Like, it could be your love of hoagies.
UFOs.
You wear people out talking hoagies all day. You better be good, right? Like...
Yep.
That right tackle is owned by Andrew Wiley.
Yep.
Owned by Andrew Wiley right now. And I don't think Lucas Niang getting healthy. And I think once you start the season with Andrew Wiley, you play the whole season. And you hope he has his best season and he signs elsewhere. And you get draft pick compensation for him. You know, if he doesn't, then you know what you got and you sign him again on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
Kennard is not taking that job. Right? And guard, they're pretty good at guard.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm going to tell you somebody else who I like is Nick Allegretti. And we'll hear from Andy Reid on this. I mentioned Allegretti, and he's rotating in at center. And, you know, I brought up Allegretti. I said, hey, you know, I know you like the versatility on the inside, and we'll play it later. But he went on to talk about, well, we use him as a tight end, you know, on the goal line package, and you got to be a smart guy to be able to handle all this. I mean, I was kind of like, one of two things here. Andy Reid is either a giant fan of Nick Allegretti or somebody's called about trading for Nick Allegretti and he's helping to sell, right? They think that, okay, Austin Ryder here or somebody else they like and they can get a draft pick for Allegretti in a trade. He was either selling or he loves him some Allegretti. I've always liked Allegretti. I think Allegretti's a good player. And I will always say that I think I like Joe Tooney. He's here. I'm happy to have Joe Tooney. He's a really good football player. Watching him and Chris Jones battle was fun. But, you know, a lot of money for left guard when Nick Allegretti I didn't think was bad. Right? But Nick Allegretti is going to make this team, I believe.
Said he had a lot on the plate.
Yeah. When you have Allegretti backing up what are, I think, two Pro Bowl caliber guards and a Pro Bowl center, that's a pretty good spot to be in. right? Yeah. That's a pretty good spot to be in. And Kennard is running at best third team. Defensively, like I said, the pass rush, liked it. They were winning all over the place. They're supposed to win all over the place. I thought when the first unit defense was in there, even when the Bears moved the ball, like I said, they were making some they ain't making that throw. Fields throwing one up for grabs against the rush and the prayer getting answered.
That was a dead duck. That was a Matt Castle dead duck if I've ever seen one. And those were the exact words out of my mouth when I saw him chuck it.
I'm like, what? No, okay. I'm feeling good. I feel good. I felt good going in. I feel good going out. I don't think I feel better because of the caliber of competition, right? But I don't think there's anything to get
feel
down
happy
about.
You're not a Bears fan.
Oh God.
I think you can feel better by the fact that you feel the same, because sometimes that first preseason game highlights more issues than it does positives. So the fact that you've gone through the first game and there really isn't much to complain about is almost the reason. I think we feel the same way about the game, but I take that and say it's actually a positive that I don't feel like there's any issue coming from out of that game.
The Bears ran the football 32 times. I don't know how many of them were quarterback runs. There's a number of them in there. But they ran the ball 32 times in a game that they won 19-14. They threw 26 passes. Like, what do they need to work on? They've got a first-time coming out of camp starter who had a handful of reps, and they ran the ball. They, to me, were on a ticket drive. We got to find a way to win this game. They played like a game plan of, like, this is what we got to do to win this game.
28 carries from non-quarterbacks. 28.
Maybe you want to work the passing game? No, we can't, because we can't protect the guy at all. At all. Yeah, it's scary in Chicago. 913-3810-810. The Royals salvage one of three from the Dodgers. We'll talk about that. Sporting Kansas City snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, leading 2-0 and 3-1. They actually, at 2-0 and 3-1, had me, because I said before the Galaxy game, you know, they need like 8 wins in their last 9 games to get a playoff spot if you look at how many points it usually takes. I'm like, they're 2-0. Like, is the dream alive? Am I going to be talking about it? No, I'm not. I'm not. But there is some hope for the future. And there's a new poster child for soccer players flop. There's a new poster child. Because I've defended the soccer folks because I think guys lay down and act like they're hurt to stop the clock when against 2-minute drills. In football, basketball, guys flop on fouls. Like, soccer carries too much of the burden for the flop. But, oh, my Lord, what was going on in this match on Saturday? 913-3-810-810. We'll open up the phone lines. We'll start off with our buddy Jazzy J. 913-3-810-810. You're in the program. Would you do that?
Wear that hat?
Yeah.
There's nothing that Stephen A. Smith is wearing that I would do. I would wear. That is
the whole, whatever his show's called, they're all wearing captain's hats, and they're shooting the show from the back of a boat. Beautiful boat.
The other two look okay.
Michael Irvin can wear just about anything.
Yeah, but wear white. Don't wear orange. If you're
just
be the
three
captain,
people
captain
wearing
stuff.
Captain's hats look stupid.
It's a little silly. It's a little silly. But you definitely can't wear it with a creamsicle, Buccaneers creamsicle orange jacket and tie.
Okay. 913-3-810-810, the phone number, 913-3-810-810. Sam McDowell coming up next hour. Your phone call is coming up right now. Let's talk to Jazzy J. You're in the program. Jay, what's going on, my brother?
Hey, Seren. Thanks for taking the call. I'm a little late to the Hard Knocks party. I was traveling last week, but that first show was such a train wreck. There's no way I was going to let another day go by without calling your show.
What was the biggest train wreck? I watch it because I know you're going to call, and so I was like, okay, here we go, and I went into it. I tried to go into it with an open mind because Eric Eager is so bullish on the Lions. Detroit Derek, who's a great listener of the program, loves his Lions. So I want to try to, you know, be fair, because I know there's a, I know I'm going to have to battle with Eager on the podcast about the Lions. I've already done that once, but I'm like, okay, let me see. I want to make sure that I'm not just throwing the guy under the bus for his opening press conference. What was the biggest thing that you thought, this is a clown fest?
I can tell you. The part where they're in the auditorium, and it's one of their coaches, and he says, repeat after me. And it's grit, dream, love. And at that point, I almost threw up and spilled my drink, and I said, yeah, that's it. I don't have to walk anymore to know that this team is an absolute disaster.
Were you throwing up because it was your 10th drink?
First one.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure. Just make sure we're on target. Yeah, I mean, I listen, you know, he's got to have some coaching chops. He's been around some good coaches. I mean, it was tutored, for lack of a better term, under Sean Payton. But I'm just like, first of all, I made this point. You know, if the Lions hire you, don't we assume it's a bad one? Like, when did they get it right? Right? Like, even, like, for the most part, like, Clark Hunt makes a mistake. Scott Pioli, it didn't work. I mean, yeah, but he was four-time NFL Executive of the Year when he hired him. You know, I mean, like, that wasn't boobery. You know, the Lions, like, throw darts seemingly at you know, what they're trying to do. So, if the Lions hire you or draft you, the assumption is you're not going to be good until proven otherwise. So the burden of proof is on Eager, who is all in on the Lions. We went round and round about it last week, and you know, I said, so what are you saying? What is you that they're going 14-3? And he said, no, like they're over under 6.5. I said, stop being so vociferous if you're like, no, I think they're gonna get to 7 wins. Like, come on. Like I don't so we you know, we're much more on the same page than we are not on the same page. But yeah, I just, and even like Aaron Glenn and Deuce Staley yelling at each other, like I don't know if they would do that if they weren't both mic'd up. I don't know that every day at practice is like that. But if it is, what an incredible waste of time. I sat there and I was joking around in the press tent today. I said, how many up-downs did Andy Reid do with the team? Because if people haven't seen it, Campbell jumps in and does 40 up-downs, which is like you're standing up and you drop down into a push-up, and then you push up and you jump back up, and then you do it again.
We used to call them shoot the cannons if you, you know, thousands. That's,
whatever.
Yeah. But
and he did 40 of them, and with his players, and he is a big strapping guy. I mean, I don't want to fight the guy, that's right, for sure. But I don't want to hire him either.
Yes. There is one of my favorite lines from one of my favorite shows was Band of Brothers. And he's talking about why he doesn't want to promote a lieutenant. And he says he's seen way too many war movies. He thinks he needs to shout at his guys all the time.
Yeah.
And that's what I don't love making the war to football comparison, but he comes across to me as a guy who's watched too many football movies and has taken his cues from there on how he's supposed to behave.
At all times, at some point during a season, in any season, you know, it's obviously relative to the level you coach, but there's a time to get after some people. And Andy Reid, but when Andy Reid gets after him, I guarantee it's in his office and he's just talking to him and they're like, I've let this guy down. Right, for the most part, you don't see Andy Reid screaming and yelling. No. You know who was hollering out there today? Patrick Mahomes was jawing with the defense because they had knocked the ball away, and he was adamant that they had been holding Travis Kelce. They're always holding the whole blanket way. I mean, he was all the way down on the other end of the field, and you could hear him shouting at the defense and a bunch of defensive guys shouting back, and he walked only halfway over to the side while Henny came out to do his reps, and he's still jawing at the defense and tell you, it's a hold. It's all, he was, that's a competitive fire.
Yeah.
That's the guy who's playing. And yes, Andy Reid, I'm sure, relished the fact that here's Mahomes sticking up for his guy. Here's the defense getting excited about getting after what they know is one of the best quarterbacks in football. That's good, healthy, competitive part of practice. But Andy Reid's not barking at Steve Spagnuolo. I mean, I was just like, I'm like, all the things. That's a great way to put it. Like they're impersonating what they think successful coaches look like, and it's Bill Belichick and Andy Reid keep winning and going to the playoffs and never have to subject themselves to being on Hard Knocks. And those are the guys that you should emulate, Jay. And that's definitely not what's going on with Dan Campbell or really throughout his staff. And what's funny is Deuce Staley is an Andy Reid guy from his days with the Eagles. He was Andy Reid's running back coach. And yet he's trying to be, I don't know what. I mean, he's the associate head coach. He's kind of like Bienemy was. He's not the OC, but he's the associate head coach there. And I don't know if he's like, this is my chance to shine and show my fire and this will get my name thrown around for head coaching jobs. I don't know. Yeah, it was. I watched that. I'm like, I'm so happy with what the Chiefs coaching staff is because it's a group of adults.
Well, it felt like every speech that they gave was like you see a really drunk guy at a bar at 2 a.m. speech that he would be giving. You know what I mean? It's the person giving the speech thinks they're some passionate speech giver that's the greatest thing ever. And to the rest of the world, it's like, yeah, you sound like a maniac right now, but yeah. Good luck to you. And Saran, nothing says seven wins like Jared Goff and Mark Brunell as your coach, a quarterback coach. That sounds like a recipe for success. But I wanted to quickly, I didn't get much on the Chiefs game over the weekend. I thought there was very little to take away other than I think I would take two B-graded wide receivers and one A-plus one. And by that, I mean MVS and Juju over Tyreek Hill. That gives Mahomes another weapon, and it's harder for the defenses to cover. Your thoughts on that, and if you know maybe Juju will be in a Chiefs uniform beyond this year. And, of course, also, Saran, my downside that I did take away was I'm rooting for Josh Gordon, but, Saran, I don't see that how he makes the cut.
Yeah.
With what we saw, and it breaks my heart because – I think you and I can't speak for you, but I still have old Josh Gordon in my head.
Yeah.
And I will never be able to shake that, and there's going to be a lot of what would have been without some of the drug abuse and whatnot. And I just so wanted him to be the Chiefs redemption story, and I don't think we're going to get that here.
No, I'm with you, Jay. I appreciate it, buddy. Great stuff as always, man. And we'll see how episode two – is it tonight or tomorrow night? Whatever, it's one of the next couple of nights. We'll see how episode two goes for the Hard Knocks. Yeah, listen, just ask Jeff Chedia. I was all in on Josh Gordon last year, and he laughed at me when I was like, all right, we predicted what yards and touchdowns. I think I had him for like 606 or 706, something like that. You know, from the time they signed him, like I thought he was going to be the other wideout, and oh, man, was I wrong. And I think the time has passed. I don't know that the fire is there, but it's time for him to be shaking the rust off now. There's no like let's get into the regular season. He's got to do it now.
Made a couple of toe tap catches on Saturday. The one look, I was like, was he really in? There's a little bit of that, but the growth hasn't been seen for that position. I as far as 2Bs versus an A+, I think I said this last week. I think the Chiefs may have fewer 70-yard touchdown plays. I think they might have more 70-yard touchdown drives with those two guys.
I think the point, you know, like what are you putting with Tyreek Hill? And I don't think you can talk about are you better off with these two guys versus Tyreek Hill without talking about the cap.
Right.
Like that's the part because
it's not in the vacuum.
Yeah, I mean like so as a rule of thumb, just answer the question. Would I rather have 2B receivers or the 1A+ receiver? When the 2B receivers are going to count $10 million against the cap and the A-plus is going to count $25 million or $30 million, I'll take the 2B pluses because I've got $15 million more to spread around on other things. I mean, reality is they have those two guys and three more guys because they don't have Tyreek Hill. And that's not even – take out the draft picks they got for him. Just the cap room, right, makes them, in my opinion, a better team. And so, yes, I'm unequivocally, rule of thumb, only guy on this roster who should be in the top five paid at his position is Patrick Mahomes. Now, I will make an exception for a left tackle because they're hard to find. We know the Chiefs have been looking and they don't have a top shelf. So if you can find your way to Willie Rofe somewhere, do it because they got diet Willie, super diet. They got tab Willie Rofe. And then Orlando Brown doesn't suck, but Willie Rofe was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Right? And that's not what they have. I would pay big money to have a left tackle to protect the highest paid quarterback in football. But I'm going to tell you at the end of this year, Chris Jones, like they're going to have a big decision to make. And this, to me, is the time for the Chiefs to make the Richard Seymour to the Raiders deal. And that's moved Chris Jones for a couple of picks. You know, a first-round pick or 2 seconds and a third or, you know, whatever the you can grab. But that would be the time as opposed to tying into a guy now that you're signing up for his 30s, 29, 30, 31. You know, I hope he has a phenomenal year and the Chiefs get a first and a second for him. That's my dream scenario. And then draft well. Juju Smith-Schuster, I almost think, if you can sign him, he didn't play well enough for anybody else to want him. If he plays really well, somebody else is going to overpay for him. So I think the most likely positive outcome is that Juju Smith-Schuster gets a really big contract to go someplace else next year because he had a monster year this year for the Chiefs. I mean, it seems like it's going to be such a needle to thread that he plays well enough that you want to keep him. Because if he doesn't play well or he's hurt all year, why would you even bother with the contract he gave right. him this year?
Yeah.
At that point, move on down the road. Sky Moore would have gotten more reps, presumably will have proven himself. And so do you really need him? You know, what other receivers? Justin Watson. Anybody got a problem with what they saw out of him?
Nope.
No? So they've got options. And I'm all for a healthy Juju Smith-Schuster this year. He has his 1,410, I think he had, for the Steelers 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to keep him, but, you know, if he's viewed as the number one wideout out there, I don't want to pay him $25 million a year. No. No matter how good this year is, the last 2 years he was injury prone. And that's not erased. That's still part of who he is. So it's going to depend on what the market is. I think it'll be, you know, I'm optimistic that he'll play well, be part of a championship team, and somehow the numbers will work well to fit within what they want to do cap-wise. But I think in all likelihood, he either won't play well enough to warrant offering him a contract, or he'll be hurt, or he'll play really well and he'll be too expensive to fit this team's cap.
And if that happens, then you absolutely say, see you later, because that's just one more instance that shows you can go get that guy somewhere else.
Yeah.
So and why re-sign him when you've just proven you can go find him anywhere?
And you continue, and you become a destination place for wide yep. receivers. Go, well, I go there, play with Patrick Mahomes, I parlay that into money. And the Chiefs would get draft pick compensation for him walking in free agency. So that, to me, is the most likely positive outcome for the Chiefs. Play great, get a big deal elsewhere, get draft pick compensation, and then move on down the road to the next quote-unquote reclamation project and do it again. 913-3810-810, you're in the program. All right, a little bit of news here. Vinny Pascantino, the American League Player yep. of the Week, correct?
Yep, first Royal since Andrew Benintendi, September of last year. AL Player of the Week.
AL Vinny Player.
On a tear.
Vinny Pascantino looking very comfortable at the plate.
Yes.
Love that swing, just a textbook home run swing he had yesterday.
Is he an easy power?
I don't – that one, sometimes I go, oh, he's got easy power. And I'm like, I don't know, he almost fell down. Like, what do
right.
you – you know, I get – no, maybe, but, I mean, I'm not qualified. I'm
pretty
not a swing doctor. I agree.
I mean, it
looks powerful.
Oh, yeah.
I just figure easy power is kind of like a guy swings. You're like, oh, what's that, a single? And it went out.
Yeah.
You know, his swings look – well, that looks like a home run. And it was.
Yep.
So, I don't know. Maybe I don't know the definition of – easy power well enough. Speaking of easy power, McDowell next.
All right, who was the previous Royal rookie before Vinny to win AL Player of the Week? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.